Thank you, JP. Glad to be with you this Saturday morning. I saw something this morning that I have not seen ever in my life. I saw two rainbows. They were in the western sky, which means the sunrise is what produced them. It was just incredible. Last week, I really meant to cover two or three points about a particular herbal remedy called green tea. Richard called me and told me, or he left a message that he had purchased, I don't know, I think it was 100 bags of green tea for just a hair over $4. You talk about a very inexpensive way to improve the health of your body. You know, since this coronavirus pandemic has been going on, every human being that's walking around, unless you're a child, you can't really make great decisions when you're like 4 years old or three or two or one or a month old. No, that's a little bit too complicated. But as an adult or even a teenager, you can make decisions on what am I going to do to help improve the health of my body. And this may not have really come to your attention or you haven't thought of it, but you know, what did people do 100 years ago when they had terrible outbreaks of the flu? Well, they ate a healthy diet. If I have to explain to you what a healthy diet is and how you're eating three meals a day from the drive-thru of a fast food restaurant and you're snacking on endless amounts of sugar and you're drinking soft drinks and who knows what else, well, come on. Slap yourself around. Come back to reality. But I meant to talk about green tea for just a moment last week, but I'm going to take advantage of this moment right here. One of the beautiful things about everything that is edible is it contains vitamins and minerals. If you go out into the yard and you pull a leaf of dandelion from the soil and it's a young leaf and you decide to chew on it because it's not that bitter, well, guess what it has in it? It has a trace element called selenium. Probably the lowest cancer rates anywhere in the world are where there is sufficient amounts of selenium, or selenium is rich in the soil. That would be good to think about. Usually if a person eats a couple of Brazil nuts a day, they get a big whopping 150 to maybe 200 micrograms of selenium a day. It's phenomenal. Where is some of the highest cancer rates? Well, that would be where selenium is very low in the soil. So when you look at the composition of green tea, and all they do is it comes from the plant called Camellia sinensis, but they're trying to harvest the leaves while they're green. I think they're drying them, putting them in tea bags or in the bulk. And so there's going to be a very unique vitamin mineral compound. But what I am most interested in is a compound that is found in green tea called a polyphenol. Have you ever heard the term polyphenol? There are polyphenols that are very rich and abundant in blueberries. They're found in cranberries, raspberries. Let me think. Pomegranates, man, they're loaded with polyphenols. So there's so many very beneficial plants, fruits, vegetables that are very rich in polyphenols. And you're probably thinking to yourself, well, what actually is a polyphenol? Well, you know how you go to the large home improvement type stores and they have Roundup. A Roundup is a pesticide, herbicide. It kills everything it comes in contact with, but mainly its claim to fame is you spray it on a dandelion that's growing in a crack in the driveway. What I wish everyone would think of is if dandelions are growing in the ground, it's because they are trying to pull nutrients from deep, deep, deep in the soil up to the surface where they can promote healthy, healthy soil and healthy plant life. They're actually doing us a favor. So instead of trying to kill plants or kill bugs with pesticides and herbicides, how does God have all this designed? Well, almost every plant that is very hardy and beneficial to mankind, it is very rich in these compounds called polyphenols. And these polyphenols, probably, you know, on paper, the correct definition would be they're insecticides. That means if a plant can produce these polyphenols, it's doing so to prevent fungus from growing on the plant. So blueberries have a very rich supply of polyphenols. The one that just popped in my mind would be grapes. In the skins of grapes, you have this polyphenol compound called resveratrol. And resveratrol, it prevents bugs from eating the grapes and fungus and stuff like that. So this is kind of a genius chemical compound that prevents other organisms from just freely feasting on the grape or the blueberry or the, you know, the green tea leaf. Okay? And so green tea has this very unusually great concentration of polyphenols. It's got more than most plants do put together. And so they say in the dried green leaf form, somewhere between 8 to 12%, depending on, you know, the seasons and the weather and the time of the year and the soil it's harvested in, you know, all that jazz. It's going to have between 8 to 12% of its dried weight as polyphenols. I'm thinking, oh, this could be pretty good right here. Of course, there's other stuff found in the dried green leaf. You've got a little bit of caffeine. I think dried green tea, is going to have 3.5% caffeine, so not a huge amount. There's an amino acid that's found in green tea called theanine. Have you ever heard of theanine? They say it's at 4% in green tea. This is the amino acid that, in some people, it really does promote feelings of calmness while at the same time promoting mental clarity and focus. Now, you tell me, do you want to be anxious, unable to sleep, irritable, mind racing? You want to have brain fog? Well, I know those are rhetorical questions. The answer is no. And so isn't that interesting that you could drink something as a beverage, which would count toward hydrating the body? I know you find this hard to believe, but there are a few people that are walking around in a continual state of dehydration. And they want to know why they're exhausted all the time and why their brain's getting tired. Well, sometimes I tell people, did you know that asking brilliant questions, I say, do you know that every good, positive chemical reaction that takes place in the cells, I'm talking about things that are a blessing, good for you, you want these things to happen, they only take place when you have an adequate amount of water inside the cell. Does that make sense? And what that means is, when you have a lack of proper water in your cells to hydrate the cells so they can work properly, guess what? The batteries will not produce adequate amounts of electricity. You may not be aware of this, but the way that we used to maintain batteries was with adding sulfuric acid or water to the battery if it became low. If somebody pulled up to the gas station, I popped their hood and checked their battery. I said, ma'am, is it okay with you if I add some water to the battery so it can actually hold a charge so you don't get stranded on the side of the road? Well, the answer is always yes. And so when you drink green tea, I don't think it has a dehydrating effect. I haven't really seen that. Now, regular sweet tea that's loaded with a boatload of sugar, yeah, that's probably dehydrating. And coffee? Yes. That has the potential, especially in some unique body types, to be very dehydrating. Or what about soft drinks? Aren't they mainly water? They are. But they can be dehydrating also. So anyway, here's an option you have. What do you think about maybe consuming green tea? Anyway, I started looking up some of the research on this, and to me, this is fascinating. But, you know, not every study agrees with other studies, so I feel like it's fair if I cover it from both angles. I don't want you thinking I'm overly biased. Yes, everybody that knows me knows that I'm completely biased on every level. I'm biased toward any natural substance or remedy that tends to promote great health and rejuvenation. I'm extremely biased against certain pharmaceutical drugs that destroy the life force of a human being and don't fix anything. You know, a man told me the other day, he said, if I drink a quart of whiskey a day, it makes me forget about my problems. And I said, I'm certain that's correct. But the problem is, as soon as the whiskey wears off, the problem comes right back, doesn't it? He said, yes. Anyway, you get the gist of it. There was one particular study I came across, and this may not sound too impressive, but I want to at least share this with you. They did a study, and they tried to determine what is the dose effect of green tea on antioxidant protection in a human being. So in this particular study, there were 15 healthy volunteers, and they consumed 500 milliliters of green tea. I know, they're on the metric system. Don't judge me for that. I like the metric system, though. And all they did was they measured different contents of the solids of green tea that was in a half a liter of water. So when they ingested the lowest dosage produced, which was 1.4 grams per liter, they saw there was no change in a human being's plasma antioxidant capacity. I mean, they couldn't tell there was a difference at all. Now, at the highest dosage, which was 2 grams per liter, the effects increased the human being's plasma antioxidant capacity the greatest. But it did so at 1 and 4 hours after they drank the green tea. So you got to be patient here. If you drink a cup of green tea that has really high quality polyphenol compounds, you got to give it a while to kind of do its job. But wouldn't that be interesting if we asked every person, tell me how you feel 4 hours after drinking really high quality green tea? If somebody tells me they feel significantly better, like they've had a bit of a boost or a lift, well, what if that boost is because you're consuming those natural polyphenols that help protect your body against damage? Anyway, this is the one that I'm interested in right here. Now, I'm not trying to be racist here, but this particular study, I didn't mean to say racist, I meant to say sexist. Okay, forget that. The best data that's existing right now on green tea's anti-cancer effects is on prostate cancer. And when I read that, I thought to myself, oh boy, whatever women have in breast cancer, men are going to have in what's called prostate cancer. Now, you know as well as I do, women don't have prostates, at least not any that I know of. Maybe, never mind. So, in this particular study, and I want you just to consider this right here. When they look at prostate cancer, considerable evidence shows that the green tea polyphenol, which the name of it specifically is epigallocatechin gallate, EGCG. I probably butchered that. I've tried to say that so many times. It strongly inhibits all types of prostate cancer. Yes, when it comes to prostate cancer, you have some forms that are very slow growing, and you have some that are just extremely aggressive. So when you find that when green tea works on all forms of prostate cancer, from the least invasive to the most aggressive and invasive, then I tend to kind of pay attention to that. So now this is what I want you to pay attention to, especially if you're a man. Studies have shown that when men consume 6 cups, now when I say 6 cups, I'm referring to 1 bag of green tea leaves, you know, per cup. If you take 1 bag and dilute that down to 6 cups, that's not what I'm referring to. So as a general rule, if we're talking about making a cup of green tea, That would be the herbal exposure to the hot water to extract its water-soluble constituents called the polyphenols. So we're talking about 6 bags a day. Does that make sense? Studies have shown that when men consume 6 cups of green tea daily, and they take an equivalent amount of green tea, or they take an equivalent amount of green tea extract for 4 to 6 weeks before they undergo removal of their prostate. That's called a radical prostatectomy. They know that EGCG, that's the epigallocatechin gallate compound, that's a polyphenol, they can detect this particular substance in the blood and also in the prostate. It's almost as if, of course that's correct, that this particular compound tends to target and concentrate in the male prostate. Furthermore, in men taking green tea, numerous biomarkers of prostate cancer activity are dramatically impacted for the better. Even prostate-specific antigen, or PSA, levels drop precipitously. That means they go down. Okay. Now here's a different study. One of the strongest clinical studies showing the value of green tea in preventing prostate cancer, which this is a different twist on this. The previous study was on men that had prostate cancer and they were about to get them removed, but they showed a great benefit if they would get the 6 cups a day in for 4 to 6 weeks before they had their prostate removed. This one's a little bit different. I like this a little bit better. But this one shows the value of green tea in preventing prostate cancer involved in evaluating the safety and the efficacy of green tea polyphenols in men that have high-grade precancerous condition of the prostate. So they know that they got cells in the prostate that are about to turn cancerous, but they haven't yet. Well, when's the best time to turn something around? Well, before it's a full-blown disease. Would you start brushing your teeth before you had a mouthful of cavities? Well, of course you would. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, right? The 60 men in the study were either given a placebo or they were given 600 milligrams of green tea polyphenol extract. After 1 year, only one tumor was diagnosed among the 30 men that were given the green tea polyphenol extract. That is the active ingredient that tends to have tremendous health-promoting benefits of the male prostate. It does so also in the female breast, just in case you're wondering. And so in these 60 men, only one tumor was diagnosed among the 30 men that had the green tea extract. Now let me counter that with this, or let me contrast it with this one. There were 30 men in this study that were treated with a placebo. Okay? Well, you're probably wondering to yourself, how many of those men did they find cancers or tumors forming in the prostate? Well, they found 9. That was 9 out of 30. And so that means 30% of those men that did not get the green tea developed prostate cancer. Now, this is the part where I'm trying to be fair about this. In this particular study, because the previous one that I read, it said it lowered their PSA, but in this one it says total PSA levels did not change significantly between the two groups of men. But the men that got the green tea polyphenol extract, they showed values consistently lower with respect to those on the placebo. So their PSA was consistently lower, but they're saying there wasn't like a huge drop. So you got to have some confidence that when you're consuming something like green tea, what if it's doing like some good for you? And even if it can't be measured straight away in day number one. You know, we live in America here and everybody wants everything fast. Well, you don't get everything fast. Sometimes you just have to be willing to stay the course and do the right things, even if you don't see the payoff. I tell you, that's hard. That's hard for me because people come in my door and they expect to be completely cured of their advanced long-term diseases they've had for 30 years in one day. That ain't going to happen. you're going to have to buckle down and discipline yourself to do the right things. Anyway, I just thought that was interesting. Now, there's articles also. I don't think I'll cover those. But if you want to call me and ask a question, please. Somebody was trying to call earlier. The number here at the station is 903-586-5257. That's 903-586-5257. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning. Hey, I have a question for you. My daughter went to the emergency room a couple of weeks ago with a lot of pain, and it seemed to be in her chest. And the doctors there thought she was going for like her heart, so they checked out her heart and said, "No, you're fine," and sent her home. And she just continues to get this pain, and projectile vomiting is another symptom. So she went to the doctor, made an appointment, and they think it's her gallbladder. And I have a feeling she's up for a sonogram next week, but they're probably going to want to take it out. She just had a baby 6 weeks ago.
Oh, bless her
and
heart.
I know someone else that had a baby and had their gallbladder out, and someone told me, you know, that's pretty common after you have a baby that your gallbladder has come down.
I'm pretty sure her prostate's okay. No, sorry. But one of the main reasons why a woman has horrible, horrible morning sickness when she's pregnant is because her body's going through the most massive house cleaning of all time to make sure the baby's got a clean, you know, room to grow in. So,
yeah, she had that. Oh.
So if we go back like 100 years in history and you ask any medical doctor on the street and say, "Hey, tell me everything you know about the gallbladder," they'd respond and say, "Are you kidding? That's the trash can of the liver." So I can't even tell you how many times I've read that term from reading old textbooks, that they used to refer to the gallbladder as the trash can of the body. Mm. And so on one level, the worst toxic debris of all time, it has to be processed through the gallbladder and through the bile. And so there's a reason why she's got these symptoms. Now, I need to ask you a question. Did you say projectile vomiting a while ago?
Yes, she does. She did that almost throughout her whole pregnancy, even to the end. And the last 2, 3, 4 weeks, she's done it maybe 6 times.
Well, this is my opinion. We need to keep her gallbladder intact, and we need to encourage it to heal and repair itself to where it's quiet, healthy, and strong, and has no symptoms. She needs her gallbladder the rest of her life.
Yeah, I don't want them to say, yes, it needs to come out.
So how old's the baby right now?
She is 7 weeks.
Okay, I have a plan for you, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Can you hear me rubbing my hands together? I'm just getting so excited. I can't even wait to get started on this topic. Okay. What I want to do is I want to lay down some ideas, and you tell me if some of them are doable. But if I had my way right now, if we could just tell your daughter every morning when she wakes up out of bed, which I realize she probably gets up multiple times a night, bless her heart.
Mm-hmm.
If we could just have maybe her husband or somebody take a fresh organic lemon and squeeze the juice in a glass of water, I think that would go a long way to start scrubbing all the 50,000 bile ducts that are found in her liver and her gallbladder cleaner, cleaner, cleaner.
Yes, that was on my home remedy I researched last night.
Good girl. If you didn't have access to lemons, I would use limes.
Mm-hmm.
But either one of those might move the needle in the right direction. But if she could start drinking a lemon water throughout the day, the lemon itself is going to act like a very precise solvent, which means it's going to help dissolve congealed bile and debris. She's throwing up because she's got so much back pressure on her gallbladder.
Ooh,
that
yeah.
Safety valve is going to blow just to relieve all the pressure.
You're right.
And so if we can find a way to give her gallbladder a little bit of a rest, that's going to work well. Now, I'm just telling you what I think about this matter, but I say that we need to do whatever we can to give her as much love and care and attention as possible and make it easy for her to heal. And if I had my way, I would make sure her very last meal of the day, whatever that is going to be just a very simple, easy to digest protein. That's usually called ocean fish. So if she likes halibut or salmon or cod, or she likes sardines, I doubt it. But if she could eat that and one vegetable, she's going to start to get ahead of the curve on this, and she'll start feeling better. You just got to make it easy on the body to heal. But if you load up with Bluebell ice cream and donuts at night and cookies and cake, there's no way that gallbladder's going to heal. She's going to have acid reflux probably at 2 o'clock in the morning, where everything starts coming back up again.
The doctor asked her, you know, about her diet and everything. She said, well, I do have a bad habit of drinking a lot of soft drinks. He said, oh, no, that would not affect this at all.
Well, he's completely wrong on that. But anyway, that's neither here nor there now. But if you want to wreck and make all that bile become congealed and thick and blow in the form of projectile vomiting and diarrhea, drinking soft drinks will do it.
Mm-hmm.
We just need to make her some natural lemonade. If she needs, now I'm being serious about this. If she needs some type of carbonated, you know, have you ever seen like the what's it called, sparkling spring water they sell at the store?
Sure. Yeah.
I would rather give her sparkling spring water with the juice of a lemon and see if she can call that good. If she said, hey, I'm going to make my own Sprite or 7-Up. If she could do that with maybe a teaspoon of honey, I would make a deal with her and say, okay, let's try that as an alternative. And maybe
I know, I'm so afraid they're going to say, oh, it needs to come out.
Well, they're going to, well, just, there's about 100% guarantee that's what they're going to tell her. Let's take it out.
She's 24. I know she's not full of gallstones. It's probably, I just don't understand the link between pregnancy, after pregnancy.
Well, it's a toxicity issue. And so if I asked you how much weight did your daughter, and I'm not being judgmental, but how much weight did your daughter gain when she was pregnant?
Yeah, she did gain, I mean, I guess, probably about 30, 35 pounds.
Oh, that's not horrible. I thought you were going to say like 40 or 45.
But you know something else that's kind of interesting? She has always had a belching problem. She could belch like...
Well, that's all the gallbladder. That's gallbladder, gallbladder, gallbladder.
And I researched it, and because she did it yesterday when I was with her, before she went to the doctor appointment, and I just got on there and researched it, and it said gallbladder issues.
Well, you're 100% correct.
But she's had that happen like years and
years.
Well,
and the reason is she's eating a food that the gallbladder finds very, very offensive. Mm-hmm. Whether, and you know what would happen if the year was 1964 and she went to the hospital, what they would do is they would say, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to give you water or ice water to drink, but we're not going to give you any food for 3 days. And you know what would happen to your daughter? All that burping and belching would go away. All the projectile vomiting or diarrhea or tummy and all the swelling and bloating that she's experienced. She's probably telling you, Mom, I just went through a pregnancy. I feel like I'm pregnant again because of all the swelling.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the gallbladder right there. There's too much back pressure. But what they would do is they would just let them fast for 3 days. And the very first foods they would reintroduce back would be things like cherries. You know what a cherry is, don't you?
Yes.
If you can't find a fresh cherry in the store, you can probably find a frozen cherry. Those work just as well. But if you fed her cherries, you know what the number one meat they would give women that had horrible gallbladder problems? They'd give them beef. We're talking about grass-fed beef here. I know that sounds bizarre, but a ribeye steak with butter on it would probably be most agreeable to her. And if we gave her some kale or broccoli or a small salad, that would be good. But if she eats a lot of sugar or she has a really tremendous sweet tooth, that's going to cause that bile to thicken. Now, on that topic, let me just float an idea her direction, through you, of course. You're my gatekeeper here. When a woman is low in vitamin C, she's not getting enough vitamin C to meet her internal requirements, that's when the bile becomes very thick. And so there's a high degree of correlation between low levels of vitamin C and either gallstones forming or gallbladder surgery. Now, I'm not going to mention names, but a gentleman came to see me, and he said, "Hey, Dr. Morgan, I work at the hospital." I said, "Really?" And he was telling me the department he was in charge of and his work, and I think it's good work. And he was saying, "We are in dire straits from this COVID-19. I thought to myself, "Why?" And I asked him, "Why?" And he said, "Because we're not doing elective surgeries right now." I said, "Like what? Gallbladder?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "That's our bread and butter. That's the way we make all our money." He said, "Our profits are down. We're going broke. We're hurting big time because we can't do all these elective surgeries and elective procedures." I said, "You mean like gallbladder?" He said, "Yeah." He said, we should be rocking and rolling and taking out gallbladders right and left and making bukus of money. But see, that ain't my plan for your daughter. My plan for your daughter is to save her."
I know, because she's got a young gallbladder. She's only 24.
She's 24. She's like a young, perfect babe.
I know. And you said about the fish, another remedy I read last night for gallbladder was fish oil.
Well, you've got to give enough good, high-quality fat for the bile ducts to work right. And so whether that's consuming more olive oil or avocados, actually, off the top of my head, the other foods that are going to be really, really good for her right now, besides cherries, if I can just really promote the use of lemons or lemon juice. So if she tells me she's willing to eat flounder fillets, which I think are mild and are not fishy smelling at all, not to me anyway, she could squeeze all the lemon juice she wants on it. She could melt butter on them. If she had that with cherries for dessert and kale for her vegetable, we're going to move the needle a long way. All this bloating is going to go away.
And so her
bowel movements will not be yellow or orange anymore. They'll be brown, which is a normal color.
Yes. Okay. Well, makes sense why she vomited all the way to, not just the first trimester, all the way to the end.
Well, I have a feeling I know how to totally mess her up today. What we're going to do is we're going to go for a pulled pork sandwich, all right, with onion rings and a Coke. If she can do that, I can almost guarantee she'll have the projectile vomiting within about 3 hours.
Yeah.
But if we gave up all grains, or if she gave up all grains and high sugar, you know, soft drinks, that's going to be her path to healing. I mean, I could tell you a bunch of other stuff. One of my most favorite plants of all time. You're probably not going to believe what I'm going to tell you, but I'll tell you anyway. They did this study on kids that had horrible, and there was a few adults in the study also that had horrible recurrent strep throat. Have you ever heard of somebody having strep throat?
Oh, yes.
That is a serious infection. And all they did was they gave them dandelion tea. I think it was 6 cups a day of dandelion tea. And 82 out of 88 people in the study completely resolved their strep throat.
Amazing.
That's what I say. What is one of the greatest herbs of all time when your gallbladder is all jacked up and it's swollen and it's like a volcano that's about to blow? It's like a big swollen balloon that's full of congealed, gunky, toxic bile, and that stuff's going to come out somehow. And if you have to throw it up, then so be it. But it's dandelion root. I don't expect her to jump up and down and say, "Oh, yeah, thanks, Dr. Morgan. I love the idea of dandelion tea." But if she could start sipping on dandelion tea, the healing would begin.
I have some of that.
I even read from one herbalist that was one of the top remedies back when they had the Spanish flu of 1918. I said, "What remedy do they use for the flu?" I mean, the ones that came down with the flu, but they overcame it, which means they survived, they did not die. So everybody's going to come in contact with the virus at some point. The key is, can you do it and overcome it and then produce antibodies against it where you can survive down the road? Well, they drank dandelion tea. And the other one, they consumed Japanese honeysuckle. Are you kidding me? I could take honeysuckle every single day and be laughing and dancing in the fields. That stuff's great. If your daughter started taking milk thistle, dandelion tea, I mean, if I could get her to eat dandelion greens or eat a salad every day, we could go a long way. Oh, my goodness. We could cut up like an avocado. So if we give her fried onion rings, fried in just delicious, super high-quality corn oil, I'm pretty sure I can wreck her in about 3 hours. Actually, it'd probably take more like about 45 minutes. She's going to go, Mom, I do not feel so good. Why did you bring me those deep-fried onion rings and delicious corn oil?
Right. That's pretty much, you hit it on the head. She does not have a good diet. And, as I was, she was telling me about the pain, she was opening up one of those Slim Jims next to her bag of chips.
Was she dipping it in Velveeta hot sauce with her chips?
Oh, my daughter.
But you know what? She's got you as a wonderful mother, and you're going to try to lovingly encourage her. But what her body's telling her is, what are we going to do about this horrible situation? Well, her body's telling her she needs to change course.
And what would happen if they took out her gallbladder? I mean, what? How can she live with her gallbladder?
No. She can live very easily. She can develop migraine headaches for the rest of her life, and she can have horrible diarrhea the rest of her life, and then she can pack on an extra 85 pounds over the next, let's say, 2 decades. That's not a big deal. So she gets to have diabetes. Basically, I'm sorry, I shouldn't be sarcastic that way. Let me start over here. If you remove the garbage disposal system from the body, guess what's going to happen? Your body's going to start soaking up all those poisons. And so the net result is she's going to have more fatigue. She's going to have more digestive issues. She's got the potential for having a lifetime of loose stools and diarrhea. But the gallbladder is like the easiest organ to heal and fix.
Having so much pain, they had given her until next week when she can have her ultrasound, some Tramadol. And she said, Mom, this doesn't even affect it at all. She said, is it going to burst? I think she thought it was appendix or something.
Well, and I can't blame her for thinking that thought.
But I'm almost glad. I'm glad they're not doing these elective gallbladder surgeries, because I think she's going to...
If you took the blender and you took just one fresh beet, washed the dirt off of it, put it in the blender, put about 12 ounces or more of the unfiltered apple juice, it looks like rusted water in a big moonshine jug at the grocery store, but it looks dirty. But if you did that with the juice of one lemon, a tablespoon of extra virgin olive oil, if that's all she did was drink that all day long, this would be a done deal. She would be a new woman within a week.
I think she would do it. And beets was on the list, too, of the foods that healed the gallbladder.
So. Every single time. Because that's what beets contain, a very high concentration of an element or nutrient called betaine. And betaine is the basis for making good, high-quality bile. So either, really all this is just a discipline issue. Have you ever heard the phrase that faith comes by hearing and hearing by the Word of God?
Absolutely.
How's somebody going to know what to do unless somebody explains this is the way it works? And so...
So just by the pain going away, we will know that these treatments are working, and she's going to be okay.
I did not say that you won't have to remind her 25 times, oh my goodness, sweetheart, your pain's completely gone. What do you think you could have done to make that pain go away? And that's really what you want to do. Make her tell you.
What would she do to make it come back?
Well, what she's going to do is she's going to say, okay, Mom, I get it. I'm drinking water and lemon juice, and I'm drinking that beet solution, and I'm staying away from the Slim Jim, the Frito Pie, even though Frito Pie is super delicious, I guess. But if she can turn and tell you, and that happens to me frequently all the time, and I think to myself, oh my goodness, did they already forget what it took to get them well, and now they're returning back to the... So it's all doable. But if your daughter heals her gallbladder, she can be very, very calm emotionally. She won't have these bouts of being overly aggressive and having a short fuse and a hair trigger where she gets angry all the time.
She's like that because
that's the gallbladder symptoms. You become very bilious, and you become angry, and you get a short fuse.
And so she can completely turn her body around.
Oh, her husband's going to love you.
Well, tell him to give me a call after the program. I'll tell him exactly how to make it work.
Oh, well, I appreciate you, Dr. Morgan.
Just think, she'll be so soft and cuddly from here on out, it'll be unbelievable.
Oh, there's so many things covered here that's going to help her.
Well,
I appreciate you.
You're
so
welcome.
Much.
Thank you very much for your phone call. I'm so glad you called. You made my day.
Oh, you made my day. Thank you,
ma'am. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, there's a phone line open at 903-586-5257. This program is Health Essentials, 903-586-5257. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. How are you today, my brother?
Do people know that you and I are actually related?
We are.
All right, good.
Because we love Jesus, we're brothers.
That's all it takes, right?
That's all it takes. Amen,
okay.
For sure.
You know what? Isn't there a Bible verse that says there is a friend that is closer than a brother?
It sure is.
That's a good one.
It sure is, and you know it for sure.
Do you have a friend that you know you can count on if you were in trouble and you said, "Hey, I'm on the side of the road, my car blew up at 2 a.m. and they'd come get you?"
Yes, sir, I do.
That you got a good friend then. Anyway, yep. Go ahead.
Really, I do. Do you have a friend like that?
Oh, yes, I do. I sure do.
You got another one if you want it, so don't ever forget that.
Good. Do you mind giving your cell phone number out right now in case anybody has an emergency? No, I'm joking.
I tell you what, I'll let you have it, and you've got it. But that's it. And nothing against all the other folks out there.
No, I'm only teasing
they know,
about that.
They know.
That's right.
Yeah. I do, but with this lady and the gallbladder daughter problem, I feel sorry for her because I've had that and I'm working on it. And all it takes is changing your diet. I can testify to that.
Well, let me take advantage of you since you're being so gracious and sharing your story. What are the things that if you eat them, it's going to mess you up?
Tacos, cheese, pulled pork.
So if you had a taco that was made of chicken, would that go easier than the pulled pork?
Well, sure.
Okay.
Yeah, it sure
Which
would.
Chicken technically is much easier on your digestive capacity than pork is. Pork takes a whole lot longer to break down.
Right, and turkey's better than chicken, in my opinion. It seems to be better.
Well, in your experience, turkey's easier, right?
It is. It's easier on the digestion The chicken takes longer to digest for some reason, whatever.
Can you eat fish pretty successfully without too many issues?
I had flounder last night with butter.
Oh, my word. How did that go?
Olive oil. It was delicious. It was baked.
Did you have any issues with digesting it at all?
No, sir, I didn't. None.
Can I ask you a more personal question?
Sure.
Do you like to add spicy seasoning to your fish?
I do. Dillweed.
Dillweed.
Yes. A little salt and pepper, butter, and olive oil, and I use sesame oil, a little bit of sesame, mostly olive oil.
You really use a little sesame?
Yeah. Sesame's got a real nutty flavor. I love it.
Well, you know, yesterday in the store, that's the only bottle of oil that I grabbed off the shelf to take a look at. It was like $4.97. It was organic sesame seed oil, and it said on the label, nutty flavor.
Yeah, it's great.
Good.
And I learned that from you because that's the good pulling oil for abscesses.
There you go.
Cleaning
good
your mouth.
Good job. That's right.
Dr. Morgan, you have taught me so much. You really have. Because you know your stuff. And
I'm learning from you today. So if did you have any vegetables with your flounder?
Yes, sir, I did. I had some spinach, and I let the spinach kind of melt a little bit under the heat of the little toaster oven.
Okay.
But not much, just a little bit. And I had that mixed in the butter. After the fish, I put the spinach in there and ate it separately from the fish.
So would you say that your evening meal was just like pretty simple and straightforward?
Oh, yeah. And that flounder... Good. Flounder is not that expensive.
No, it's not. It's surprisingly not that expensive.
Exactly. It's good. And you can get it in Granary, or I think they have it at Walmart. I'd rather get it at Granary myself.
Well, sure.
It's ocean fish. It's not farm raised. I don't eat anything.
If there was a terrible run on groceries in the grocery store and people were like clearing them out because they were worried there wouldn't be food, have you ever seen a flounder shortage?
No.
Neither have I. It's like no one gets it besides us, probably.
No, people turn their nose up to what's good for them, and they eat the junk, like the now Frito pie. I love a Frito pie every once in a while.
I wish I hadn't brought that up. Now,
no problem, really. When you said Frito pie, I thought, oh no, I want a Frito pie.
To be clear, I wasn't saying that benefits the gallbladder.
Yeah, no kidding, really. That doesn't. But every once in a while, all things in moderation, I think that's in the Word of God, too. Well, of course.
And you know what? If you had to live the rest of your life without a Frito pie, it wouldn't be worth living, would it?
Oh, no. I couldn't. I'd go ahead and kill myself right now. I couldn't take it. But, no, seriously, I could. I don't eat it anymore. Honestly, don't.
No.
I don't. There's a lot. I don't eat Slim Jims anymore. I don't eat potato chips anymore. Because of the, they're not good for you.
Would you say that you're thinking more long term? What's a long play? How am I going to live a long, productive life without health problems?
Yeah, I want that 120 the Lord allowed. That's what I'm shooting for. And it's sometimes it's tough, but you got to take care. And the gallbladder, I mean, you know,
you've got to have it if you're going to live a long time.
Exactly. And I have a friend that had his gallbladder removed, and the symptoms, the diarrhea, the hurling.
You know, just the bowel issues and constantly in turmoil, yeah.
Exactly. And he's no energy, just tired all the time.
Well, and you know, the point that I was trying to get to, I probably didn't like flesh it out real good, but if you don't address the reasons why your gallbladder's upset, even if you get your gallbladder removed, the problems are going to just come right back if you don't address the reason why I got sick in the first place.
Exactly. You got to clean it out. And then eating junk again if you want to.
Well, what does the Fram commercial from the 1970s say? You either pay me now or you pay me later, right? Or something like that.
Yes, sir. I got to ask you a question before I forget.
Yes.
But I love this conversation. The reason I called, did you say you said 6 cups of green tea?
Yes, I did.
Six
individual cups of green tea, one bag per cup.
Right, and 6 cups of green tea daily cures strep throat, correct?
Well, I don't know that I said the word cure, because that's a pretty strong word, but I said in this particular study, they took people that they had mainly children, but there were some adults in the study, and they gave them only dandelion root, not green tea.
It's dandelion root.
Yeah. They gave them dandelion root, and it was a complete cure in 82 out of 88. So, to be fair, it wasn't like a total cure. So, that's still, statistically.
And dandelion, not green tea for the stress.
Yes, exactly. Okay. But then again, dandelion root is so good for the liver and the bile ducts and for the body.
Oh, I drink it. I do. I've got it in my kitchen all the time.
You know, I didn't finish that study that I was reading this morning, but they were looking at the use of dandelion root for treating other forms of cancer. So I can't tell you the numbers on it, but you got to remember, dandelion root is so good at helping to wash your body clean. And so it's one of those deals that you drink it, maybe saying, you know, this may not be the most delicious stuff of all time, but it's so good for me. But personally, I've learned to like the stuff. I drink dandelion tea every single day. But then again, I might be a weirdo.
And that's, you are, Dr. Morgan.
Well, it goes without saying. Yeah.
You're one of the greatest, nicest weirdos I've ever met, sir.
What a nice compliment. Thank you so much, buddy.
I wish I had your brain, for sure. I really do.
I've got at least 3 brain cells that are working on all 8 cylinders right now. The other ones, they're still napping. Well, the thing of it is, if you don't have a plan to continually improve your health, it's just like this. I asked a minister yesterday. I said, "You tell me, if you're a believer, can you just sit there on the fence and remain neutral on everything, or do you have to actively use your energy running toward God?" He goes, "Yeah, there's only one way." Okay. And isn't that called being either hot or cold? There's no such thing as really being lukewarm.
24/7.
And so if you're not actively coming up with some type of reasonable, doable plan to improve your health, then you're probably going on this downward spiral toward disease.
is the ice cream, the sugar cereal. I know people in my family, a grown man, he eats sugar cereal and milk every morning, and it's not farm milk.
Well, it's the crack cocaine of carbohydrates, is, you know,
yes, exactly.
The sugar in cereal.
And then he wonders why he doesn't have any energy and he doesn't feel good, because what your food is your energy and your fuel.
Let me run something past you, and you tell me if I can make it make sense to you.
Okay.
Okay, when you take, whether it's a fat or a protein or a carbohydrate, you've got to digest that, and when it's broken down, it goes from the small intestine through the lining of the gut into your bloodstream. And from there, your blood is going to transport this potential energy along with oxygen into your cells. And it goes down into a structure in your cells called a mitochondria. That's where all energy production takes place, like you just mentioned with your son. And so what happens is, and I'm you've got to be able to take the carbohydrate from, say, you know, broccoli or asparagus or a potato, and the molecule of energy that's made is called ATP, adenosine triphosphate. Well, I was reading this article not that long ago, and I'm just going to kind of create a scenario, but it was saying there's a new phenomenon that's going on because of all this carbohydrate consumption. It's called ATP binding or trapping. And here's what this means. And I'm not going to use the name of a restaurant, but let me just kind of see if I can get as close as I can without mentioning the name of the restaurant. But if you go to an Italian food restaurant and you load up with 6 breadsticks, and then you have like a huge bowl of pasta primavera, and yeah, there may be some chicken in there, but you're loading up. So what happens after you've just completely flooded your body with all those carbohydrates? You leave the restaurant, and you're driving down the road, and you think, oh, my goodness, I have got to have a hot fudge, double-decker fudge brownie sundae from Brahms. I can't make it. I need some sugar. And you're thinking, dude, you can't need sugar. But that's called ATP binding and trapping, and that's what those high-carbohydrate diets do. They just totally fool your body into thinking it's starving for more sugar. Isn't that nuts?
It's nuts, and I know the restaurant you're talking about, because I saw their commercial the other day on TV.
Well, when I said breadsticks, I just meant rolls or something.
They've got a place for us. They're waiting for us to return or something like that. I thought, yeah, you're waiting. You don't be waiting for me, because I won't be there.
I wonder if that means they were completely closed down to in-store traffic. Yeah.
Yeah. They're ready to let you have that ATPP or whatever you're talking about.
Well, it means a life of no energy. How about that?
Yes, exactly. 100%.
But, you know, that's got to be very discouraging to say, oh, my goodness, Dad, I just ate all this food, and why am I so tired, and why am I so exhausted? Well, I think there's a lesson that can be learned from that. So we've got to figure out.
A 12-pack of Dr. Pepper, you know, that young lady that's having the gallbladder problems, you know, that's a lot of her problem.
Well,
the soft drinks, they're good.
And she probably doesn't realize that that's one of the main reasons why she's continually tired and exhausted. And so what happens is you go, man, I need a boost of something. What do I do?
Yeah.
Well, how does the Dr. Pepper commercial go? Have a pepper at 10, 2, and 4.
Oh, yeah.
Those are the known times of the day that we go through this cyclical dip in energy, so you got to give yourself a hit of caffeine and sugar.
I wonder where the 10, 2, and 4, where that came from. I guess a doctor...
No. That actually has been proven scientifically, that we go through these moments where there's a little bit of a dip in the blood sugar, and you're going, hey.
Yeah, I didn't know that. But
it's a real thing. It is.
It's a real thing. You know, I always thought it was, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, just 10, 2, and 4. Why those hours?
Which technically, if you were served an omelet made from 3 eggs that had everything in it that you liked, you could eat that at 7 o'clock and say, dude, I'm not even hungry until 12. I'm not craving anything, because the fat and the protein, it has more of a satiating effect. And whereas if you load up with heavy carbohydrates, like you have honey buns for breakfast,
yeah,
an hour and a half later you're thinking, well, I need some more of that. That's why I'm calling it the crack cocaine of carbohydrates.
I got one more question for you. Are you supposed to eat an hour after you wake up, within 1 hour?
Well, it depends. There's so many people that come to see me that have horrific health problems, and they just can't seem to get over the hump. So, for example, what if a person says, I feel horrible all the time, I'm exhausted, I've got to be able to lose all this extra 80 pounds that I'm hanging on to, I'm inflamed. Then sometimes what I tell them is, if you skip your very first meal of the day, then instead of you eating breakfast, your body will eat you. Which it goes into this autophagy mode where it starts saying, oh my goodness, he ain't going to feed us.
Right.
Let's go to the energy that we're holding in reserve. But I still like this idea. You've got to retrain your body to start, you got to improve your metabolism. And so for some people, they probably need to skip breakfast. Now, if that's not an issue, then I mean, I'm fine with eating breakfast.
I like to eat a couple of eggs in the morning sometime, not every day, every other day probably.
And, okay.
Some chicken sausage or turkey sausage, that's what I eat.
You know, technically, but, I know this sounds crazy what I'm going to say, but if you said, you know what, I've got a hard day of work ahead of me, I need energy, I would have zero trouble with you having your sautéed spinach and your flounder with wild dill weed.
I don't know why
you said weed.
Well, it's dill weed, isn't it? That's what it says on the bottle.
Okay, I'm just teasing you. It just sounded funny to say dill and weed in the same sentence. But anyway.
Yeah, my snap, it's snapping too quick.
That's all right.
Yeah.
But no, that sounds. But if you had that, you might tell me that you function so much better if you start your day that way than if you did it with, like, you know, carbohydrates that the average person eats.
And I've never thought about smoking dill weed, though.
Really. That is not what I was referring to.
I know.
But if you want to, I'm pretty sure there's somebody that can sell you all the different devices to do that with.
Oh, I'm sure. Exactly. Yes,
that's like on every corner now, isn't it?
Everywhere, you know. If you want it, you can get it. No problem.
You know, that really does, on one level, that disturbs me that somebody would sell all those things to somebody that's 18, 19, 20 years old.
They're evil, period.
Well, I don't want to say that. I don't know that the,
I've got to. I, that's how I feel.
Well, those things are just so, so addictive.
And Dr. Peppers are evil, too. A lot of people laugh at that, but
you know,
they are.
Technically, you could be just as stressed as somebody that drinks a pint of vodka every night, but you could flood your body with ice cream and Dr. Pepper, right?
Exactly. And you can tell. As soon as you have that Dr. Pepper or that, you feel good. Oh, I'm satisfied.
It does.
Oh,
it gives you a boost.
It does. And then 30 minutes later, you feel like you're miserable.
Yeah, you crash.
Crash. You don't want to do anything, nothing at all. And who wants to feel like that? Is it worth it?
This sounds like a made-for-TV movie about a rock star that crashes and burns on carbohydrates and illegal pharmaceuticals anyway.
Yeah.
How it didn't play out so well at the end.
Yeah.
No, I appreciate your phone call very, very much.
God bless you, sir. And God bless you.
Happy Father's Day to you. I hope you have a good weekend.
You too, Dr.
Thank
Morgan.
You. Thank you very much. I appreciate you, man. I hope you have a great day.
God bless America, too.
Yes, God bless America, too. I pray that God shines his grace and his favor upon each and every one that's listening this morning. Thanks for tuning in. I think we have exactly 15 to 30 seconds left, so sorry. That's probably not enough time for another phone call. Forgive me. But if you will, tune in this time next week, and I'll try to devote myself to more phone calls. And this program is Health Essentials. I'm your host, Dr. Roy Morgan. I am so glad I got to be here today, and you made my day. Thank you so much for your phone calls, and I'm almost positive a lot of the ground that we covered is not going to just help the people that call, but it's probably going to touch enough metrics to where anybody could say, I can do that and improve myself, even though my gallbladder is not failing.